There's so many talented people in this city. There's so much good music, but nobody cares outside of the city because all the money, unfortunately, I have to bring that word up because it's attached to the banking industry in the city. It's not attached to anything creative. So therefore, there's nobody really looking at us because there's no money thrown into music here. And the people that live here, whether they're new here or they've been here their whole lives, who listen to music or make music, they're not really even that disenchanted with it. All my friends that are musicians, they just keep going, and we know that there's no attention on them. We don't care. We want to make good music.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Amplifier, the music podcast where we shine a light on the Charlotte music scene. Because Charlotte is more than just a banking city or a football city. So each weekday during the month of September, we're going to explore the people, places, and things that help define the Queen City's crown sound. And today, an electronic artist who isn't afraid to chop, mix, and mash it up. That's coming up on Amplifier.
Amplifier. And then the beat will drop.
Amplifier.
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 Can you introduce yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I'm Matt, and I make music, produce music under the name Dirty Art Club.
Matt, how did you get started in music?
My first memory of music was when I was around 3 or 4, playing piano. From there, started playing drums, guitar, all the, you know, basic instruments one can pick up as a kid. And I think I started playing drums at 10, guitar maybe 12 or 13. And when I was around 16, wanted to start actually sampling old songs for making beats.
When you started getting into samples or sampling, who were you looking to for inspiration or for guidance on that? Did you have an artist in mind?
Oh, yeah. I loved Wu-Tang growing up since I was probably in sixth grade. I think the moment I realized I wanted to do that is hearing a song off of Wu-Tang Forever. And just realizing what they were doing to make that happen, because I heard something familiar in a song that reminded me of all the old soul records and stuff my dad would listen to. And I thought, okay, I see what they're doing. They're just taking little snippets of these old records and looping them and adding stuff to them. And I thought, that's the best sound I've heard. It's just, you know, it's past futuristic, and I was just immediately drawn to it.
Now, some people who are fans of music might not know of the bigger concept of sampling, like what your music is, which is that you're taking bits and pieces from everything, from film and television and song, and you're bringing it together in a kind of musical tossed salad of sorts. Mm-hmm. How did you learn about sampling? Because again, like when most people listen to songs, they might hear some things that sound familiar, but they don't connect the dots to say, oh, Kanye just used like 30 different samples. They just think that's Kanye's music.
Right. When I started making beats, I didn't start with sampling. I actually started playing everything, but I tried to make it sound as if it were sampled, because that's the sound I was looking for. Not so much the music element, but the, I guess, sonicality. Eventually, when I got a record player and was able to hook it up and understand, you know, how to take parts off of vinyl and kind of get the right snips or loops or whatever, I did it visually, where a lot of people would do it with an MPC. I would lay it out on a computer on like a, you know, software. I think I started with Pro Tools. And, you know, I'd basically find what I wanted and either loop something really simple because that's what's called for sometimes, is just that's what makes it feel right. Or sometimes you have to use 10 different songs to get your point across. And like you said, sometimes using parts from movies, television, whatever, old commercials, whatever I can use. And then a lot of times I'll play over it. Sometimes if I have like a melody in mind, I'll play guitar to fill in the gaps or play like a little interesting line, interesting to me at least, you know, whatever I can find.
Dirty Art Club with the song Pulp. So if you had to put a percentage on original compositions within your music, would you say it's more like 10% original, 90% cut and paste sampling from other sources?
Probably, yeah. Maybe more like 8%, 92% sampling, maybe 8.5%, something like that. I've tried to do the math before.
I have never sampled music. I geek out over finding those little reference points within it. Listening to your music or listening to music from another band that samples a lot, like the Avalanches. And it just boggles my mind in the most beautiful way to try to figure out how you found this library to pull these samples from, all these like inspirational areas of movies and television and things. So how do you collect these sources? It seems like almost like a running media loop in your head of like picking out, okay, I'm going to take this and this from that.
Yeah, it's so over time, I guess you know, I have days where I don't feel like really putting anything together or I'm unable to, and just not feeling, I don't know, creative or whatever. So I'll spend that time just going down rabbit holes these days on YouTube or whatever's at my disposal now. I mean, a lot of purists would hate to hear that, but I really don't care. I think purism is kind of very limiting and irrelevant to making something bigger. You basically pigeonhole yourself into just using records. Well, I mean, why do that when I can find old Indonesian songs from the 70s that you can't find on records now, you know, that, I don't know, 800 people have heard, you know, since the 70s. It's basically like just going down these rabbit holes of finding this and that, and it'll lead you to something else. And then I basically just go with whatever says, use this in my head, and I'll find something else that goes with it, that structures this, you know, a complementary to it.
You mentioned that nowadays it's easier to find these different kind of clips, rare clips on YouTube or, you know, any kind of other digital source. But when you're starting out as a teenager, enjoying samples, listening to samples, where were you finding those sources?
As a teenager, I would use either records from my dad's collection. I remember he had a friend who saw what I was doing, and he gave me a stack of probably like 200 records, like a bunch of old, yeah. And I just went from there, and at first I was sampling stuff that was not really obscure. I think I sampled like a Childlight song, that Have You Seen Her song. I remember it was one of the first ones that because I just loved that song growing up. But today, again, I've lied. Oh, I see her face everywhere I go, on the street, and even at the picture show. Have you seen her? Have you seen her? Oh, I hear her voice as the cold winds blow in the sweet music.
music on my radio. Have you seen her? Tell me, have you seen her?
Sampled it, but I didn't want anybody to know that it was that song, so I chopped it up so much that like people who knew the song didn't even know I was using that song, which then later I realized was just kind of unnecessary, because I mean it can sound cool, but you know it's just kind of overboard. So now I try to find stuff that's just a little more obscure, well a lot more obscure, and that's kind of where it comes from. Just basically my dad's friend back then. Nowadays, I'll use everything I can.
You mentioned cutting up the song so much that people may not have even recognized the song to begin with. Maybe there's like two camps to this, but when it comes to sampling, are you of the camp where you want the listener to have an idea of what you're sampling, or is it that you want to do something so different and bring all those references together in one song that someone might not even recognize that they come from 100 different places?
That's actually a really, really good question, because I've thought about that a lot, and I think that the most important thing is that it sounds like you want it to sound. Some of my favorite producers, they mostly just loop the best sounding part because they know that that's what's going to hit you. MF Doom or Madlib or somebody like that, though, they're not trying to like hide it, but they know that that's the sweetest sounding part, and that's what's going to sound good repeated, and they'll do little things here and there, dropping it in and out. I think that there comes a point of unnecessary athleticism almost, to where people are just, you know, trying to outdo somebody by chopping something up more than necessary. And I get it if you're trying to hide the source of the song, but really when it comes down to it, it's all about just what sounds good at the end of the day.
Whenever I hear music that samples from a number of sources, very rarely do I hear a source in that mix that is very contemporary. Something that is within the last year or 2 years or 5 years. Usually it's stuff from 40s, 50s, 60s, all the way up to maybe 80s music or, you know, pop culture things. I don't really know if there's a reason behind that, or maybe it's I'm not listening to sampled music that takes from those contemporary reference points, but do you have a thought on that, if you do that yourself or you don't?
I've used some stuff from the 90s, I think that's as recent, I think, as I'll get. And it's not necessarily because you have to stay, you know, behind a certain year or decade in my head. In my opinion, I think it's because most of the stuff that came out after the year 2000, I guess, which is used as a landmark year, there's a lot of great stuff that you could sample, but it's just, it doesn't have that sound. And I don't think people do it because I think it's frowned upon, actually.
Really?
Even if it sounds good, yeah.
So that brings us to the big question.
Purism.
That's been purism. Yeah. I want to know, is there some unspoken rule book that is provided internally, whatever, to people that sample music? And it sounds like on the list of things is using actual vinyl rather than ripping. Another one might be not taking past to the year 2000 for samples.
Well, there's a big, I think, presence of purism in everything in life, actually. And I think to a point it stifles a lot of different things, especially music, because if someone can make something that makes you feel something, and it comes from sources that aren't necessarily true to the beginnings of that form of music, such as, you know, it used to be sampling vinyl, or 8-track request. You know, I mean, if that were true, then we would all be sitting there with 4 tracks or 8 tracks, you know. how far does purism go to where it's like, well, this is antiquated now and it's just holding everybody back, and you're complaining because somebody sampled something that wasn't straight from vinyl? Well, sorry, but do you like how it sounds is the main question. And if you don't, then you don't. But if it's a matter of how you did it, you know, then I think that's unreasonable.
What are the other kind of
stigmas?
What are the other kind of stigmas that come with it, or the arguments internally in the music community for you?
I think this strange, like, overboard kind of one-upmanship where somebody's like, well, I did that sample, but I did it like this, and I added that. And I mean, I'm almost embarrassed sometimes to say, well, I've got, you know, like, put like 20 different parts in a song just to make it sound like the song already did, because somebody will laugh and I'll be like, well, I know that sample and I hear other stuff going on, but you really sat there for months just to make it sound like I could make it sound in 2 hours. And I'll say, well, yeah, but that's just the path I took, you know? So I think we all feel like we have to do something transformative to a sample. Even if it's just a loop, even if you hear the song and you say, I see what part you took, and you started here and it ended there, and then you did it again over and over again, there's still something else that has to be done to give it a texture, I guess, or a more of a vibe than it already had. A lot of people, I guess, are very judgy based on that, you know?
It's a little weird to think, because like, if you look at a color scale, I mean, it just on the single color of purple, there's so many different shades to it, or textures you can put into it, gradients, anything, that if you look at one versus the other, you know, oh yeah, those two look different. So I'm surprised that within sampling, you have someone that could say, no, I used that sound, you can't use it or touch it.
Right.
And if you do, you're unoriginal.
No, you're actually right with like the color hues thing. I think that I could sample a loop and then somebody else could sample the same loop, but theirs might be a darker shade of purple. I mean, it's the same, you know, it's coming from the same source. So there are little nuances, I guess, that people use to differentiate their beats, you know, from each other. And I think that it gives a song a different shape than somebody else's. Even though it's the same loop or same sample, you could put 2 people in a room and give them the same loop and say, make a beat into that or from that. And they're going to do something different with it in some weird way. And it's going to make it sound different to the listener.
Is there a source that a lot of artists like yourself will sample from?
I'd say late 60s soul. It's probably the most, I'm actually going to use the word exploited, even, you know, I mean, I hate to, but it's...
Why exploited?
Well, because there is an element to sampling that I think is, you know, you're doing it in the open. People know I'm taking somebody else's music and I'm doing with it something that I'm thinking of doing with it. But I do think there's this feeling where, I think if I sample a song... And I think the original artist would not be happy with it, or just be like, oh, that's not even cool. I don't even like that. If I felt like that, then I feel bad about using it, and I don't. Because if you didn't do it any justice, then what's the point? More or less, like, why did I even bother taking this person's song and not doing something that I think other people will truly enjoy or feel something from?
So I take it to mean that you did not sample Prince, since Prince was always against anyone covering his music.
Oh, I don't think I would ever sample Prince. I think that'd be too hard for me to do. I have my boundaries, you know. I've actually got a lot of songs that I really like. I almost like them too much to sample them. I can't bring myself to sample them.
Like which ones?
There's a song by Gloria Walker, who is a not well-known soul artists from the late 60s, early 70s. I think she made it through there. And there's a song called Love Is in the Air that she did. I don't know if it's a hard one to find, but it's too good to sample. It's just too good. I mean, I could take any part of that song and just loop it, and it would sound like probably the best thing I've ever made. And I don't know if I feel, if I'm scared of it, or if it's like I feel like it's unfair, you know?
Love is in the air, and I feel it.
Coming up, Dirty Art Club on the secrets to sampling and that elephant in the room. You know the one. Stay with us here on Amplifier. Hey, Amplifier friends. We're hearing from the musicians throughout the series, but I want to get on the mic to shine a light on you and your passion for the Charlotte music scene. Even if you don't live here, like listener Tim Lloyd, who's from St. Louis, Missouri, he had this to say. Hashtag WFAE Amplifier is so very, very well done. I've never been to Charlotte. I have no ties there, but I'm totally into learning about the scene there. Good stuff. Shout out to listeners like Tim who are discovering the Charlotte music scene through this series and for sharing that message with us. And if you're not Tim, I would still love to share your comments on an upcoming episode. So while you're listening to this episode, go into your podcast app, Apple, Stitcher, what have you, and leave the Amplifier podcast a rating and review. This really helps spread the word about the Charlotte music scene, and it's a way for us to see what you like about this show. You can also tell me your thoughts on social media. I'm at A Change of Tune. While you're doing that, let's get back to our interview. I want to bring up a quote that I heard from Mark Ronson, and the name may sound familiar to listeners because he's the super producer. He's behind some of the contemporary greats like Adele and Lily Allen and Amy Winehouse and
Black
Bruno
Lips.
Mars.
He yes. produced a Black Lips album.
Yes. That's, his work goes all over the
great.
Place.
Yeah.
And he's an amazing producer, and he's a huge fan of sampling. And the quote I want to say aloud is, you'd be really hard-pressed to listen to something today and not be able to at least find four bars of it that's completely derivative of something else.
And, absolutely.
And in that way, it's as if sampling, although it is taking bits and pieces, more so than, you know, maybe contemporary pop music, at least it's being authentic by outwardly confirming that, yes, we are sampling, and yes, there are origins to this, many origins, rather than just showing off as if, oh yeah, this is 100% completely original music.
Yeah, I know we're on radio, but I'm over here just heavily nodding my head because, I used to write songs, you know, of course, before I started sampling, all I did is sat around and wrote little songs on the piano when I was young, and even when I was sampling, I sometimes have to feel like I need to write a song on, you know, using guitar or piano or whatever source that's available that I feel like using, it's always derivative of what I've heard. Always. It's, if you play four chords, it is as strange as you think you may be getting with them, you're hearing something else. Like, you know, you're going to play four chords that aren't the standard, but they still sound right. Now you might sound like MGMT. I mean, there's nothing you can do that's completely original, and everything you do is inspired by something you have already heard.
Like, I love music. I was raised on music. I'm not a musician, but I love diving into the different components that come together to make a song. And even so, it took me up until my late teenage, early 20 years to realize some of my favorite songs, like Blackstreet, No Diggity, it sampled Bill Withers. The very start, the first few things you hear in the song, that is Bill Withers' Grandma's Hands.
Grandma's hands clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's hands played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hands used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass. Might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hands.
And he's West Virginian, which is where I was born and raised. And that gave me a deeper appreciation to the music of my state, because I was able to say one of my favorite songs by a group, Blackstreet, is sampled something from my state in a way. And that's something that I think is missing, because you don't have that music history or the music education or even just the information to say, oh my gosh, I can learn more about music because of what's being sampled in music.
I think that rings true for a lot of people. That, I mean, I've found samples, just search around thinking like, okay, this producer, what song did he sample? And I'll find it online, somebody, you know, like found it, and then they put it out there, and then I'll listen to the song and end up loving it. And I'll just listen to it, and it'll be a new song that I listen to. You know, I'll listen to their beat first, and then all of a sudden I'll be more hooked on the original. I think it's a great way to just keep spreading music. Just keep spreading it.
Was Dirty Art Club with the song Soul Eater. So there is a little elephant in the room, Matt.
Always.
And that little elephant at the moment is that at the time that I reached out to you to let you know, one, I appreciated your music, it's amazing, and two, I wanted you to come in for an interview to be a part of this Charlotte Music Series, you were actually moving up to New York City, and that's where you currently live. And this was just a few months ago, so it was like right there at that point. But I want to talk a little bit about that, because I do wonder if your move was influenced by the music scene or lack thereof in supporting the kind of interesting work that you do.
Oh, thank you. It primarily was. Charlotte's a great city. I love it. Like I said, one thing I noticed before we started the interview is one thing I noticed being in New York is made me appreciate the city that I've spent pretty much my whole life in. There's so many talented people in this city. There's so much good music, but nobody cares outside of this city, because all the money, unfortunately, I have to bring that word up, because it's attached to the banking industry in this city. It's not attached to anything creative. So therefore, there's nobody really looking at us, because there's no money thrown into music here. And the people that live here, whether they're new here or they've been here their whole lives, who listen to music or make music, they're not really even that disenchanted with it. All my friends that are musicians, they just keep going, and we know that there's no attention on them. We don't care. We want to make good music. But I thought, you know, I had a couple of things happen in my life that allowed me to take off. And I've never taken off before. I've never just got up and left. And I decided to do that. And I thought New York would be the best for me just due to the fact I know people there. And but I don't know. So far, it's just Charlotte, but, you know, way bigger. It's just a place with people. And that's, you know?
Well, I would say when it comes to that money comment, that in the short amount of time I've been here, almost a year, it feels like the arts and the music scene is supported, but in ways that might not include certain genres or folks. So the way I see it, it seems like the classical or the fine arts, those are ones that are actively supported. But when it comes to maybe DJs or EDM or sampling music or even like other genres like indie rock, pop, folk, maybe there's just not as much support thrown in that direction.
And there's not. And I'm glad that things like classical music are supported here, like the orchestra and things like that. I mean, that's a beautiful form of music. I think a lot of people that support that kind of music are people with money. They want to be at these events to be seen with money, listening to this, you know, high class music that I love. But, you know, I've never really been to see the symphony, I don't think, or anything like that. I don't think anybody's going to be like, hey, let's get up all us millionaires and go to Snug Harbor and watch an indie rock band. Nobody's saying that. And I don't expect them to, but it's just in New York, there's more diversity to where that might actually happen. That does happen. And it happens here too, I'm sure too. I just don't notice it. It's mostly like musicians watching other musicians is really what it's like at these places, or supporters of me, just strong supporters of music, which there are a lot in the Plaza Midwood neighborhood. And of course, outside of that too, but a lot of people don't even know what's going on there.
You still have some ties to Charlotte. I mean, your heartstrings are being pulled. You maybe want to come back sometime. What is it that could change with Charlotte when it comes to the music scene that would make you feel like this could be your home once again?
I think it will be my home once again, regardless of any changes here. I think that I wanted to just see something else for just a second while I still could. And I think that as far as changes, I don't know if I can think of any that need to be made. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, nobody supports music here, you know, or I'm not supported or whatever. And I guess I'd say to that, well, work harder, you know, spend more time making music, spend more time trying to put it out, figuring out ways to get it out. Because, I mean, the world is very small now. I think Charlotte has more of a problem with the live music scene rather than good musicians putting stuff out, because I do know successful musicians here. As far as that, I don't know if it's going to change. I think that this is a transplant city, to say the least. It's great that people move here for various reasons, but I think that the culture is going to be kind of underdeveloped until certain people like, you know, you and other smart and people that are interested in the creative aspects of a place, or we all get together and just make it more of a thing.
Dirty Art Club's latest release is titled Basement Seance, and it's available on dirtyartclub.bandcamp.com and wherever fine music is streamed and sold. Amplifier is a production of WFAE, This episode was written and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Cole Del Charco. Our editors are Greg Collard and Jadon Marshall. Our theme music is provided by Dirty Art Club. You can share your favorite Charlotte music recommendations right now on social media. Just follow and tag me. I'm at A Change of Tune. New episodes of Amplifier drop each weekday this September, so make sure to subscribe to the Amplifier podcast on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and wherever you find podcasts. For more Charlotte music chats, including playlists and even a Charlotte music map, visit wfae.org/amplifier. Until next time, I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.